And welcome back to Radio Freeman, here live on American Freedom Radio. Tonight we have the great pleasure of talking with Stan Dale. Now, Stan has held a top secret security clearance and worked undercover with the FBI. He speaks of the coming global economic collapse, the UFO deception, suppression of badly needed technologies, and the coming destruction of America by civil war, followed by world war, or potential foreign invasion. He's a regular on national syndicated radio shows, been on Coast to Coast and many others, and has written a best-selling book with his wife, Holly, Dare to Prepare. He's a flying saucer technician, advanced propulsion advocate, and free energy researcher. This is going to be a great show. Stan has some breaking news for us to help us understand what's coming and what we can do about it. So welcome to the show, Stan.
Thank you, Freeman. Good to be here.
Well, we were just hit with this massive solar flare, and the weather has completely changed. We're now in a nice tropical zone today. It went from freezing to ice, and now just could go outside without any shoes.
Yeah, I
I'd
know.
Say we have some changes coming, right?
We do. It's very weird weather, and we were shoveling snow here for the first time last week, and just the last of it's just disappearing now, so, you know. We're kind of high desert here where we are next to Pueblo Lake, but it still snowed, and it was a nuisance for the first time. So, yes, it
Texas
is
too, I guess.
I heard that, and in Texas it's worse because they don't know how to drive on ice and snow and stuff. They cancel all
right.
kinds of stuff.
Exactly. Well, what do you think are some of these causes of this Earth's strange weather pattern? We obviously have the sun erupting and Sun Cycle 24. What else is going on?
Well, the sun is the main driver, as far as I can see, for the whole solar system. It's not just Earth that's noticing changes in temperature and storms. Large storms have been seen erupting on the surface of, I think it was Saturn here recently. And there have been some new spots appearing in the rings of, or on the surface rings of Jupiter. Now, In addition to this, on our planet, where humans are involved in, you know, industrial activity and whatever else, we do see some extra enhancements to the climate change from the carbon house, or, you know, the greenhouse carbon emissions and things like that. But I don't think these are the main driver for what we're seeing. I think we're seeing a periodic change in the entire solar system. Kind of a major wobble, a bump in its smooth sailing that we thought was kind of ongoing. That's a problem with human science, and that is that we use what the Latin term is post hoc ergo propter hoc, and it basically means that we observe things that have happened in a certain way before and assume, therefore, they will happen that way again until they don't.
Right.
And I think we're approaching one of those periods in cosmology and the geology and the geography even of the planet, where we are approaching the time where it doesn't behave to the pre-existing pattern. This solar cycle is low in sunspot numbers, yet it is producing some interesting high energy flares, like the X1 or X2.4, I think it was the other day. 5-6 years back, we did see it produce an X49, which was off the charts. But right now, an X1 is still quite a nuisance, especially if it's Earth-directed, and China is already having internal problems with communications because of the effects of that. So, with things like HARP and with defense weapons that are being tested and perhaps used already by various nations, United States, China, and Russia, we can expect other anomalies in the weather to occur. I know a lot of people try to blame certain weather changes on HARP or on the Chinese equivalent or on the Riga facility for Russia or whatever. But you have to think about it and realize that if these are aggressive weather weapons, that they don't call each other and say, look, I'm going to be doing testing this week. Will you not turn on your equipment because it might interfere with mine? So when all these guys do try to affect changes in the ionosphere and various other things they can do with the HARP type equipment, what they run the risk of, and I'm sure do frequently encounter, is interfering with each other, with their the energy patterns that they put out overlapping and causing unpredicted results. And the fact that the Defense Department put out warnings on the West Coast of the United States and the East Coast recently when they were doing tests, which would screw up radio and magnetic compasses, they said, we're doing this, we know it'll interfere, we'll start at this time and we'll stop at this time, and then after that everything will go back to normal. And right at that same time, birds started to drop out of the sky and fish started dying on the East Coast, and a number of rather bizarre things were happening, not only here but in Italy and New Zealand and Australia. So right. When you see all that, to me it's evidence of something not going exactly correctly, but something that we are definitely interfering or interacting with. Now, my own research is, I wasn't researching to see what the government was doing. I was researching to see what the planet itself was doing, and the sun and the gravitational fields, and been looking at a way to use the information I'm getting from about 100 different testers who are working with us all over the planet in 17 countries to see if we could measure accurately enough the change in the Earth's gravitational field using some very simple equipment. Now, that is in progress now. I put out the call about 10 days ago, and we have these people emailing me, even as we are on the show right now, wanting to participate in the experiment, which might tell us when the spin pole, the gravitational pole of the Earth, is going to do a major shift.
Now, how does that experiment work?
Yeah. Well, it's fairly straightforward. We ask our testers to get a 12-volt car battery and some wire, copper-coated, insulated wire, between 0.8 and 1 millimeter in diameter, somewhere around there. A length of it, probably, depending on where they're doing the testing, in their home or in a garage or whatever, length of it that's about 40 feet, so that they can run that wire to one terminal of the battery and tape it up to the ceiling and make four loops all at right angles to each other, so you're facing the different points of the compass. And the end of the last loop comes back to the other side of the battery, where they tap it quickly and don't leave it connected, because with a wire like that shorting across a battery, it gets warm very rapidly and messes up the nuclear lattice of the wire and screws up the experiment and burns the fingers. So,
right.
Yeah. I had to put that in some of the emails I sent out, because some of these people are wanting to do this, but they're not experienced, with playing with electricity like that. So, anyway.
Oh, yeah, they have to put directions on wet naps,
That's
open
true.
Open packet, unfold, and use.
Yeah, I know. it's bad, isn't it? But anyway, they mean well.
Right.
And so I treat them like students in a class. In fact, there is one classroom in Pennsylvania that the teacher asked if all of his students, their high school students, could participate in the experiment and write it up. So we've got a whole classroom helping us there. It's almost like being in an orbiting space lab and talking with students like that to get them to participate in scientific experiments. So it is fun. But anyway, when you tap the end of those four loops up on the ceiling, I was talking, when you tap that end that's unconnected but to the battery, it will make the wires in those loops move, swing in a certain direction. And if you've hung the four loops at the different faces of the compass, the different poles, east, north, south, west, if you've hung them like that, what will happen when you connect a battery one way is all the loops of wire will bend suddenly, deflect in toward the center of them. And if you reverse the wires on the battery and touch it, they'll all blow out away from the center. Now, we studied this phenomenon. I wrote up a paper on it called Gemstone 1, which is on our website at standeo.com. That's S-T-A-N-D-E-Y-O.com. And while we're talking about it, if you want to see part of what the room looks like, we suggest people do for the rest of the experiment I'm going to tell you about, you can click on standeo.com and then a stroke and then c2c.html, or actually click on a thing that says images if it's still up there when you visit the site, and you'll see a page full of images, and down about halfway down there you'll see gravity test for pole shift and how you do it. And well, it's just the illustration. We have to send out instructions for it. But now then, we did this experiment ourselves here at the house in 2007-2008 and had family, friends and family in Australia and New Zealand run the test down there at that time. And not only did we have them run the test on the wires hanging from the ceiling, we had them do another test, which is taking that wire and instead of looping it around the ceiling, is taping a portion of it to, just putting a piece of tape up to the ceiling, and the wire connecting to it is held back away so it can't influence that wire. And that wire is hung straight down, stretched down to the floor tight, and taped to the floor. And then the lead from that end of the, you know, from the floor end, is the one that goes over to the battery, and you tap it like you did with the four loops. Now, what happens is that wire twists, but it twists rather oddly, not back and forth like we thought it would. And not only that, the wire shrinks; it actually gets shorter. So we had to explain this, and I thought I'd explained it sufficiently, and this was back in 2008 and 9, and I was going to write it into my second paper, part 2 of the Gemstone Scrolls on gravity. Well, we started running the test again. As I said, we've got these over 100 volunteers doing it, and some of them have already been putting data back to us from their tests from last week. And to our surprise, all of the readings that we got in 2007 and 8 have been reversed. Everything is upside down. All the field movements we saw are upside down in the southern hemisphere. And here, they're backwards, upside down.
Man.
Oh, yes. And, you know, there have been people trying to tell us, oh, what your wires are doing are interacting with the Earth's gravitation, a magnetic field. No, that's not the case. And because the movements are small on the vertical wire, you know, the twists are small little pulses, and it's hard to see it when it's stretched. We have people break a CD or a DVD and get that little shiny material out of there and tape about an inch square piece of it on firmly onto the vertical wire in the middle of it, and then shine a laser pointer on it so that it makes a dot on the wall some 10 or 15 feet away, so that any small movement of that wire will twist that little shiny piece of material and reflect the laser dot left, right, or up, or wherever it goes. And that's how we've been able to track this. And that's what you'll see on the images page under the gravity test for pole shift signs is a room with the walls, two of the walls removed, and a laser pointer and a battery and some wire to show how you set it up and report the results. It is really quite extraordinary because we're pretty certain from what evidence we've gotten from these tests that the wire atoms are all lined up in a certain way relative to the Earth's core. They're, if you imagine an atom like a spinning top, the axis that it spins around, its spin axis, is pointed down at the center of the planet no matter where the atom is. And that all atoms on the planet in their normal rest state are lined up this way. They're all lined up pointing their south pole, if you wish, at the center of the planet. And it's not the magnetic pole, it's just a spinning pole on these atoms. What we're seeing when the wire shortens like this is that atoms are crunching together in that piece of copper wire. And we had to explain that, you know, as to why this would happen, even if the atoms are lined up like that or polarized. What would cause them to get closer together when they're not normally that
hopefully,
way?
Hopefully, we're coming to the break right now there, Stan, but I hope we find out on the other side. If you guys want to join in, go on over to freemantv.com, click on the Freeman Radio Zone, and you can join in the chat, pass your questions on, and we'll keep up with that. At least I was pretty certain I heard the music. Sometimes it's soft.
Okay.
And well, and then if we can give people information, I'm sure a lot of people will want to jump in on your experiment, and you can let us know how they can send their data to you.
Okay. That's pretty much a handful at the moment. We're trying to get some testers down at Antarctica, and we think we may have an opening into a project down there from a university, because it's important for us to get data as close to the southern pole as possible. But when I tell you the rest of what we think is happening, I guess on the other side of the break, it will be quite astounding. I never thought I'd hear myself be talking about what we're going to talk about, but yeah. Now, this test, as I say, has reversed. The data coming in so far is reversed, and we're trying to get information from strategic points across the planet. I'm trying to be sure that I eliminate any other sources of interference with our test, which includes testing outside of zones that are considered affected by what's called telluric currents or earth currents. And these are linked to solar activity and the ionosphere, and these currents flow, I think it's toward the equator during the day and then reverse at night or vice versa of that. But these are very strong currents of, you know, 1 to 2,000 amps of current. And the total power in this earth current grid, or spirals, I guess they are, vortices, is about 400 megawatts. And that's not a lot, really, on a global scale, but it's still enough that we're trying to eliminate the effects of that from the test data we've been getting, so that we can be absolutely certain that what our test is doing is interacting with gravity. Now, from my early days when I was recruited by Dr. Teller's project to work on flying saucers down in Australia, I did learn that electricity can interact with gravity under certain conditions. And those conditions are, in a craft, is to generate a spinning direct current vortex of current in some very thick wires that are about 4.5 inches wide and about 3/8 to 1/2 inch thick. And these are wrapped in coils around a kind of donut-looking former in the center of the saucer craft. And these will allow you to generate your own gravitational field. And so I know that electricity, direct current electricity, does affect and interact with gravity on a very strong basis when you generate a field like those craft do that are like, you know, 400 to 800 feet in diameter. What we have here with the test I'm performing is kind of a poor man's way to make electricity interact with gravity so that we can see changes in that and hopefully anticipate a couple of things: earthquakes and shift of the axis of spin of the planet, the pole shift that people are talking about. I don't know that we'll be able to do it as accurately as we want, but I think from the results I've seen and the rapid changes in some places that we've got a new tool to apply to the geophysical system here and see what's happening. How's that sound?
Well, that sounds fantastic. We need all the data we can get, and we're going to get more of it when we get right back. Now the break comes. Radio Freeman.
You can trust this is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American. Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Live worldwide weekdays, 5 till 7 Central on American Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Radio Freeman. Make sure to keep up on all of these shows. They are going to video and coming out soon on UNN Network, I think. Who knows where these all videos will go, but at this moment, they are all at freemantv.com, and expect Stan Deos to be up there as well, because this show, you're going to have to see to believe. And we're about to get some information that's over the top and dire information for our current times. So we left off with the experiment, the understanding of the wires, and figuring out that things are squishing. Gravitational forces are coming upon your experiments, and what does this all mean?
Well, I'm writing a paper that's going to explain, I hope, a lot of this stuff with animations and illustrations, plus the formulas that I've used. But what I've discovered in the process the last 3 or 4 years that we've been doing this is that there is a formula, an algebraic formula, a simple one, that explains where planets have to orbit around our star. And you can use that formula around any star to see where planets can orbit in a stable orbit. It predicts it. And so I've used this, and Neptune doesn't fit exactly where it should in this whole scheme of equations. And we found out that it's because, as NASA has also pointed out, that there is some kind of a large body orbiting somewhere out there that is perturbing or bothering the orbit of Neptune and Uranus. It's pushing it back.
NASA called this Nemesis, right?
Nemesis and Planet X. I mean, they've even used the term as well, which is, you know, kind of not the best thing, but if you're trying to be taken seriously, but let's call it Planet X. And recently they've made announcements that they're going to release a press statement on a large body. I think it's a gas giant that's way out in the Oort cloud, which is the outer limits of our solar system before it touches the outer limits of the next star closest to us. I think it might be Betelgeuse or something. But anyway, this Oort cloud is where all the comets and stray characters that come zipping into the inner planets come from. At least that's the prevailing theory at the moment. And this big giant out there is going to be visible, they think, and they're going to show the images. And they say that because of the size of it and its motion within a visible portion of the Oort cloud and closer to us than it was, that it may dislodge some comets and things that we'll see a few years later coming into the inner planets and possibly being a nuisance to us. Well, now the equations that I put together, or the major equation, shows like splash rings that form around a central core of the solar system. Now, these splash rings are like in an invisible fluid, like what they used to call the ether space or empty space, but it's got a fine fluid that is so fine that if it has atoms, that they are like atoms compared to our atoms in size. I mean, or to our atoms compared to the sun in size. I have the images up on the website here for what I call the containment field of gravity. And under the hypothesis that I'm putting forward from the data we've been getting, there are two parts to gravity. And NASA has actually admitted they have discovered a second weaker force, a gravitational force, in the solar system, which slowed down Pioneer 10 and 11 when they were out at about 75 times the distance of Earth from the Sun. Now, this weak force is what I'm calling a containment field, which is a spin in the fluid of space. We go back to using fluid equations for space to explain gravity. And this containment field forms like a spinning splash that you would see in a pond, except it's spinning around the center. It'd be like you put a drill down into the water, a hand drill, and let it spin up, and it would form waves out there that look like little standing rings around where the drill is spinning, but they'd be spinning. And in each one of these humps, or these ripples, is where a planet can orbit. Now, this containment field contains atoms that have their own spin, little bitty tiny atoms, and they line all these atoms up. And it's that part, which is the major gravity that we determine on a planet or a star, is the strength of all these little bitty tiny ones spinning like that. Not so much the containment field, which organizes planets and moons into their orbits. So this is going to be a breakthrough in understanding the cosmology of our universe. Secondly, while I was doing this, I found an orbit out at 250 times the distance that Earth is from the Sun. And you say to yourself, okay, big deal, Stanley, why is that important? I mean, you know, what's the big deal at 250? Well, there should be a planet out there. They haven't detected it yet, but if a planet were in that orbit, it would be very stretched out like a long egg shape, a long elliptical, unusual shape. And it would travel very fast when it got close to the Sun and went around it and came back out. But the magic thing is that the orbit of the planet in that medium 250 radius, you know, astronomical units from the Sun, the orbital time of that is 3,600 years plus or minus 12 years. Now,
that fits right in with Sitchin's theories.
Yeah, and I know I get a lot of flack about it, even quoting Sitchin. You know, there's people like Mike Heiser that says that Sitchin was a fraud and this and that, but there's a lot
of... Can't spin a good tale without some truth, you know?
Yeah. And I thought, okay, so Sitchin may have glossed it here and there and made a couple of dollars off of, you know, starting a fad, but there was basic information there, and even the Mayan calendar looks at something that could tie in with that. So I'm not poo-pooing it, and I nearly fell off my chair when I found that orbit that was empty, and that was the timing of it. I was estimating the orbit is tilted. It's not perfectly horizontal in its path around the sun. It's tilted to the ecliptic plane, they call it, by about 23 degrees, at least that much. And when it passes in close to the sun every 3,600 years, it comes in and dives into the solar system around the orbit of Mars or the asteroid belt, we think. And once it starts that entry point there, it'll be about 11 to 15 years before it exits on the other side of the sun in that same orbit and goes back home out there in the deep, dark part of space where it normally lives. So if it's there now, we should be able to see it fairly shortly, if not already, and it's not being widely broadcast by whoever's seen it. We are trying to, here in our group, get contacts inside of observatories, even amateur ones that are reliable in the southern hemisphere, to look for it. And it takes possibly infrared telescopes and things like that, but there are places that might have access to that would help us to let this information out. I don't see any reason to hold that back from the public, in my opinion. It's a normal thing that comes through the solar system if it is this planet, and we can learn a lot as it passes through. And if it's going to cause any geophysical damage, then I think we should tell people to start preparing, you know, emergency food and provisions for a certain number of months, whatever it might require. So I'm not a proponent of keeping the information on a rogue planet like that quiet. Now, having said that, go on. Well, ask your question, Freeman, because I'm fixing to jump to something else now.
Okay, because I'm just thinking that we have all kinds of data coming now, and I don't know whether any of us in the private sector can receive any of it, but you've got the WISE telescope, you've got the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer about to go up to the International Space Station, and then, of course, there's the Lucifer telescope the Vatican has out in Arizona, and you toss in the Wormwood project over at Learmonth Observatory in Australia, you would think we'd be getting some of this data.
You'd think, that Learmonth project up the Northwest Cape there, the Air Force was manning it when I was there in Australia living in Perth, and I did call and talk to a woman there, an officer there at the base, and asked her about the sun and various things, and this was before Planet X was on the table. So I said to her, you know, what's happening with the sun? We're getting extra ultraviolet here because it's ozone hole. And she said, well, actually, there's something else wrong. In 1992, she says, we noticed and measured two new kinds of frequencies coming out of the sun. It means that our whole formula for how the sun is working is incorrect. And these new frequencies were in the ultraviolet spectrum and are being absorbed by plankton and small microbes in the ocean and heating up the oceans faster. Now, I could never get that in hard copy. She apparently wasn't supposed to tell me that much, it turns out. But I did get some confirmation of that from a solar observatory here in the southwestern United States. So they do have information, and they are told, I mean, I've got the paperwork here, they are told not to release it to the press without permission from higher-ups in the Department of Defense or the White House or whoever's in charge at that time. Even our own senator here, Salazar, was putting forward that information, making sure everybody understood it at USGS last year. I think in September, late September, he published that, saying even your subcontractors that work for USGS or NOAA or NASA, you are not allowed to release to the public any data that might cause excitement, you know, or anarchy if it got that bad. You pass all that information to us, and we'll tell the public what they need to know. So it's not a secret.
Right.
It is official. They do muzzle our scientific sources.
But, you know, one of the the strangest ones that I found is I was tracking these incoming bolides, which didn't seem to have a rock. The incoming fireballs that were anomalous by causing earthquakes and sonic booms. And I began tracking them throughout the whole Obama era because I felt like he was going to use asteroids to foment the weaponization of space. And so I thought maybe these were some faux asteroids or something that they were generating through things like HARP technologies or the ionospheric heaters, because one seemed to find its way directly over the HARP facility back in 99, causing an earthquake in Anchorage, sonic boom, sending everybody to their shelters. But what happened, and I have this in my Space War news section, is that all of a sudden, the government announced that discussing these incoming bolides is now secret. And I have the government document saying that you can no longer, and scientists were all in an uproar that they could no longer get the data on these incoming, you know, sonic boom, earthquake causing fireballs. So yeah, absolutely. We're looking at a clampdown of what's going on. I gave a news report before you came on the air about Barack Obama handing out these medals of freedom and one going to Warren Buffett, who said he was giving all his millions over to the Bill Gates Foundation, which, of course, is building deep underground bases and seed vaults in Norway and preparing for the worst.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know. You know, I've watched at about 2 o'clock in the morning down in Perth, I watched a meteor come in, and I looked up in the sky and I saw this green kind of bright ball of light way off on the horizon, and it was dripping burning green globs from it, and I thought, oh, someone's shooting off a Roman candle, you know, and because it was that far away, still looked about that size. And then I realized, gee, that's coming closer, faster, and that's big. Wow. And then it came and lit up the whole neighborhood and everything with this green light from it. And
that's right.
Zipped overhead, still didn't hear a sound, and hit into the forest behind us there. Boom! Like that, right? And the ground shook. Mm-hmm. And I thought, whoa. And I hadn't heard a thing until all of a sudden it had traveled so fast that there was like three booms that came behind it, three sonic booms. And I assumed that was going hypersonic, you know, through three wave barriers. Because all the sonic booms were coming behind it. And when they shook, I mean, everybody woke up and thought Martians had landed. But those are impressive. And, you know, they reported that breaking up into four pieces, but nobody ever found it. And it was nothing.
Right.
And, don't worry about it.
Right.
But I was impressed. So I'm sure like the people up in Alaska were when that bolide came in you were talking about, because that was pretty mighty.
Yeah, and I've been tracking them. There have been a lot of them, and it's definitely part of our puzzle here. And I think it's very curious that they would go ahead and, you know, make that secret.
You know,
how can you hide a big green fireball, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to ask yourself, Freeman, what if you were in charge of the government, U.S. government, or maybe some kind of a world government like United Nations or something, and you knew there was a huge disaster coming to the planet like this, would you, in good sense, I hear that. Let's pick it up after the break.
Absolutely. What would you do if you were president? I'll tell you, I'd have people growing food right about now. There's no doubt about that. Well, we're going to get deep into this. We'll be right back. An announcement that there may be another large body in our solar system. They called this body Nemesis. And the belief even led to those of the Star Viewer team of Spain to announce that there's actually a binary star in our solar system, G1.9, which amazingly looks like the Firefox logo. Then this was all just hushed up once again, no more. But now the fear is back, and the announcements of these extra bodies in our solar system that we had no knowledge of, bodies that were too dense to be seen in our normal light. And tonight we have Stan Deo showing us the mathematics and the very specifics of how such a body exists out there and why, and what potential catastrophes could come from this. So please carry on, Stan.
All right. Before we went to the break, we were talking about what I was asking, what you'd do if you were president or, you know, the leader of the world or whatever, and you knew a life-extincting event was about to happen, an ELE. Would you tell the people officially what was going on and deal with the resulting anarchy that would come about and the thieving and shooting, which would prevent anyone from preparing to save a portion of civilization to rebuild? Would you do that, or would you keep it from them, make secret bases, store food, seeds, information to rebuild society after the event, and hope that, you know, maybe some people do survive, you know, that aren't in the protected areas? And it gets to be a very difficult question to answer, because if you're in that high a position on the planet, you're not just a leader of a tribe. You're looking at the extinction of the whole race on the planet if you don't do something to preserve at least a core of survivors, you know, a core gene pool, whatever. So, if you and I were in that position, we'd probably be hard-pressed to make that decision. It's like the lifeboat's too full, we can't take you all, and so the rest of you got to fend for yourself. But you don't know that you have to fend for yourself is the issue. So the way that I would probably approach that is to make unofficial leaks available to the people that I can't tell officially, so that the thinking people among them would say, it is possible that something could impact us, or there's going to be a great disaster based on what leaks we've heard from here and there. If it does happen, maybe I should prepare my family in this way or that way, whether it be, you know, putting food and medicine and clothes and weapons aside or whatever, or finding a secret place to go and endure whatever it is until it passes. So that way, a percentage of the thinking population, the aware population, could prepare themselves for such an eventuality unofficially. And that way you would avoid the anarchy that would result if any such official announcement were made.
Right. And
the other problem is this. I've talked to a number of geologists and seen them interviewed. When they are asked to tell you when to move out of the way of Mount St. Helens or Pinatubo or something because it's going to erupt, they have a hard time figuring from the seismic data when those things are going to actually erupt to a point where you need to evacuate the nearby cities. And if they get it wrong, and this is definitely a big worry for them, if they call an evacuation, say, like, you know, for some major city like in the Philippines, if they call that evacuation, nothing happens, then all the people that have been robbed during that time or been hurt or killed in the evacuation, all the business and commerce lost from that is, you know, for nothing, because it didn't happen. But yet, if they don't tell them when they think it's going to happen, it may wipe them out. So it's a darned if you do, darned if you don't type scenario, and you'd face the same thing on, you know, an ELE type event. Much as we'd like to think that our science is so exact that we can tell where, an asteroid 20 years from now is going to hit on the surface of the Earth when it gets close to us, we don't have that kind of mathematics at our disposal. It's just not there. And one of the main reasons is we don't have enough data, accurate data, about how gravity works. Heck, when they sent the Apollo guys around the moon, they had to call in an expert, the lady I've talked to here who did the programming for it, to figure out why their gravitational equations for just going around the moon weren't right. It was off, and they had to do something really special to get 13 back. So, it's a comfortable feeling to think they've got it all under control, but they don't. They're just like us. They get up in the morning, have their coffee, and their bad moods and whatever else. So, understanding this, what Holly and I have done, my wife, she's written a book called A Dare to Prepare, and I've written a cosmic conspiracy book. And those two books are a pair. Holly's book prepares you for preparing your physical body and all the things that you need to live to endure many of these kinds of threats that are potential. You know, normal things as well as exotic things like asteroid impact or pole shifts or that kind of stuff. But the normal things as well, like earthquakes, volcanoes, floods, tsunamis, you know, that kind of stuff. And on my side of it, I go into the technology that has been suppressed, some of it that I've been involved with, and into the spiritual development side, the Christian side, and say, look, when it all boils down, we're all going to die sometime. So if you're going to go earlier than your neighbor because of something like this, be sure you're right with the Creator here. So that's how we've approached this problem, and we're not in control of the world. We're an unofficial source of information, and we try to sort out what is good from what is bad out there, you know, the rumor versus real fact. And in doing so, what we've created here at our home and our website is an unofficial kind of news gathering source that we have to filter and try to substantiate when it's something really exciting.
And that is at standeo.com. I hear cosmic conspiracy is very hard to get these days.
No. We've got it now. I put it back into print and added some stuff to it in 2010. But it was hard for a while.
Fantastic, because I'm coming after a copy, Stan. You better believe that.
I'll get you one, Freeman.
Fantastic. Well, we're back up on the end of the hour, and we'll be back with another hour getting deep into biblical prophecy and who Stan thinks the potential Antichrist might be. So much more. So much more. Stay tuned. Learned so much with my guest tonight, Stan Deo, and we have a whole nother hour to go, so I'm truly excited. Well, we live in a time when an asteroid named after Satan, Apophis, is hurtling towards planet Earth, said to strike on Friday the 13th in 2029. Of course, no one's too certain if that's the reality of it. But when we start to looking at the satanic connections, we have Apophis, the serpent deity of destruction of the Egyptian religion of Akhenaten, heading towards planet Earth, while we have a president standing in office whose name, in Hebrew, means lightning from heaven, the very description of Satan. He rides around in a limousine known as the Beast, and when you play his catchphrase backwards, "Yes, we can," it clearly says, "Thank you, Satan." Now he's come out to start a space war. He's sending up X-37Bs, HTV-2s, and many national reconnaissance orbital rockets, along with moving into our new spectrum of some satanic highs, as far as I'm concerned, with what I see and all of the things that are going on with Barack Obama and even the rest of the world. It's all getting very strange. So let's not turn away, and let's start to understand what's going on with these people and the ritualistic nature of their world that they're bringing us into. So Stan, this is our short segment, so I thought I'd just throw out some of those satanic connections to Barack Obama and lead to maybe the idea of the Antichrist, but we can't get into that right now. But right now here is Barack Obama has assigned Ray Mabus as head of the Secretary of the Navy and therefore head of Space Command. And Nostradamus' prediction saying that when Mabus dies, the Antichrist will rise. What do you think about all of this?
Well, you know, it's funny. Holly and I were watching TV on the Jack Van Impe show, I think it was, this last Sunday, and he was mentioning that there were three fellows. I think Al Sharpton might have been one of them, but maybe Jesse Jackson, I can't remember. There was three guys who said in the public media that they thought that Obama was their Messiah, you know, ushering in a new age, and that we needed to start counting time instead of B.C. is, AO after Obama. And right. and we saw on the same program where Jack Benefi was talking about how many leaders of Islamic nations in the Middle East were calling for Obama to bring a peace settlement to the Middle East, you know, and be their Mahdi, their, you know, their Messiah.
Right.
When you see all this coming from these sources, and you and I kind of know how weak his position appears, you know, as far as international diplomacy, you got to wonder what's behind it. And then you recall, well, you know, Henry Kissinger said that Obama was their fair-haired boy being groomed to be the leader of the New World Order. Duh, the penny drops that we got to keep an eye on this guy. He may not be the one that the people call the Antichrist and, you know, that Nostradamus has predicted, but boy, if he's not, he's certainly a close runner, and he's laying the groundwork for the guy that is. But I do address that in the new edition of The Cosmic Conspiracy. In the last appendix I put in, I put in a whole description of what I've retranslated from the Book of Daniel from the ancient language. And in there was a code about the hidden agenda that is coming from fallen ones who are and their leader poses as an alien god to the people of Earth and helps the leader of Earth with technology so he can overthrow all the governments and the armies of the world and bring it into a one world government. Now that is there in the Book of Daniel, and I painstakingly show people how I translate this, not by magic or anything else, but it is something that that will prove to them that this is the time.
And it is the time, and we're going to find out so much more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Radio Freeman on American Freedom Radio.
Freedom Radio. Give it to them.
Freedom Files, weekday, Monday through Friday from 3 to 5 p.m.
Central on American Freedom Radio.
Sometimes to figure out where you're going, you have to know where you came from. You have to go back, have a look, and realize what has happened. And a lot of times, as Stan was saying, we think we know what's going on because we've had the data in front of us and nothing has changed yet. But it is changing, and life has changed on planet Earth. And if you guys step back to the time of Pangaea, when Earth was one global continent, and then the separation of all these continents and tectonic plates, as we are told, is a slow-moving process. But what if it wasn't? What if Earth changes come dramatically and quickly? We have stories from ancient biblical tales of the sun standing still. We have tales coming to us that show us that massive catastrophes have occurred on planet Earth. Crustal shifts have occurred. Mammoths frozen solid with food in their mouth. Tell us what's coming, Stan, and what we can look for and the signs that will show us the way.
All right. I agree with you. I think that Earth's history is filled with catastrophic events. The case of the Earth pulling apart, or the surface spreading and the continents being ripped apart, was sudden. It wasn't, you know, a gradual inch per year type thing. Even the Egyptian records of one of the pharaohs, I forget where he was. He was back in the early dynasties. Said, the earth grumbles and moans. I wish it would stop. And so for years during his reign, they were hearing the sounds of the stretching and the continents drifting and breaking apart. In the biblical text, they say that occurred during the time of a guy named Peleg, P-E-L-E-G, which in Hebrew means the time of the dividing, or the splitting, the separating. And that was probably when the land was splitting apart and being pulled apart into the continents that we have now. So that did happen back then, and I've looked at the work of a guy named H.G. Owen in England, and he has a well-documented, well-researched book on the expansion of the Earth from what it was originally. It's gone up 20 to 23% in size and its diameter in this catastrophic surge whenever that occurred. Now, my theory or hypothesis on gravity at this point does allow and show and predict, actually, that the containment field for a planet goes through an aging process where the center of it, like where the planet is, gets bigger and bigger over periods of time, and then it'll stop, and then it'll get bigger, and then suddenly the poles open up and holes form, and the whole surface of that planet forms out into a ring around what's left in the core and becomes debris and orbital stuff like you see around Saturn or even Jupiter and some of the outer planets as well. This means that the surface disappears. It becomes flotsam out there around the core. Now, that's a long time off. I don't think that's happening anytime soon. But I do think because of this containment field does periodically oscillate back and forth or move back and forth at the poles, that holes in planets open up at the polar regions, one hole at the top, one at the bottom, and then closes again. And it opens up for a period of maybe weeks, days, months, or whatever on the planetary scale, and then closes back up. But when it does open, the hot inner core of the planet will push heat right out through that polar region. And surprise, surprise, two things have been recently discovered here on the Earth. One, the Arctic ice pack is melting early. It's warm, and the melting ice is forming like a body of water up there that will catch more heat, and so it's a self-perpetuating thing. The pole is melting. Is it simply a periodic thing that happens every 50,000 years or something? Don't know. Go down the South Pole, and within 100 feet or so of where the South Pole is at the moment, near the Vostok Russian station that drilled down to that Lake Vostok and stopped last year because they got down within 0.2 of a mile of punching into the lake down there. They stopped. Why? Here is this warm water lake 2.5 miles underneath the surface of the ice cap at the South Pole, where, of course, if my hypothesis is correct, we have an opening forming right now, which is letting internal heat of the planet come out, and it may just actually open out to a point where there will be a visible hole down into the side inside of the planet when it's through. Don't know, but this is what the hypothesis suggests. Now, that is catastrophic, and it kind of feeds the hollow earth theorists. I know that. I have not been a hollow earth theorist or supporter until this year when I found these things in my theory. But it would explain how, for instance, the tale that Sitchin tells could be true, and that some planet called Nibiru or Nemesis, whatever, is way out there, 3,600 year orbit, and it's out there in the cold where nothing could grow and no light from the sun is really visible of any use out there. So no people or animals could live on it, but yet they could if they lived inside the planet, which had holes either artificially opened by them or by the planet's natural aging, and they could live well inside the planet until it came around here and the holes opened. They could pop out, come visit the Earth people, get back on board and go back out, and Sitchin could then read the report thousands of years later, carved in stone. So it is possible, and I didn't want to talk about Planet X in the past. I didn't want to talk about Hollow Earth. But now I moved into those camps because of what I've found with the equations here and the animations we've been able to do of this containment field gravity. So I think we're, at least here in our little research group, we are on the verge of a major discovery in how the universe works and how it's going to affect us in the immediate future.
And at the same time, we're looking at spiritual warfare that we're sitting in and what seems to be the end times. I mean, even Ashton Kutcher in his Fitness Weekly was announcing that he was going to the gym just to be prepared for the end times. Tom Cruise building a shelter for Zeno's return. You talked about having things leaked out. People are preparing, but this is definitely religious in its connotations.
Yes. Certainly, I take that position myself. You'll notice the Cosmic Conspiracy book that I take a strong Christian viewpoint. I am a believer. My dad was Jewish. We didn't practice it at home except on Friday night occasionally for the meals. But basically, we are Christians, Messianic Christians, and do expect a return of the Messiah, the real Messiah, very shortly. But before that happens, what I translated from the book of Daniel fits perfectly what the New Testament says. Look out for a super, super clever deception that will fool everyone on earth, and even the elect of Israel and of the church, if such were possible. And that deception, I am certain, is this UFO business, where alien critters are going to pose as our creators, and they're going to have technology and evidence, even probably film footage of their own making from the time of the crucifixion to show that they're, you know, like eternal beings or something. They are going to fool us into a one-world government under their boy, whether it be Obama or Nimrod Novick or whoever it is. They're going to fool us into thinking that peace, love, and harmony is going to reign under this leader, and they're going to do their best to use technology with him to prove that. But the book of Daniel does say one other thing. This new world leader, which will divide the world up into 10 kingdoms, and the Club of Rome has already published that model, which I've printed in the book, 10 Kingdoms of Earth, he's going to take some of those kingdoms and their people, their inhabitants, and give them to the aliens posing as gods for their own use. And the use in the vernacular, or the colloquial expression of the Hebrew that I translated in Daniel, suggests that they become like fodder or food. Now, this is strangely similar to what we see in the V series.
Yes, yes, or even back in the Twilight Zone, or How to Serve Men.
Yes, yes, a fantastic episode. I have the whole collection, yes. Yeah, it's...
They let us know. I mean, you know, Stargate, SG-1, they say right there in their credits that they're greatly acknowledged the help of the United States Space Force and Space Command in the making of SG-1. So we know that they are trickling in this information. We have Hillary Clinton announcing that she's acknowledging the galactic government. She's seen running around with Paul Davies' book, Are We Alone? We have all of the conferences coming together with the Royal Society, the Vatican, and CERN, and all of the connections there. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely putting it out into the public right now.
Well, I think more than anything this year, I think in the first 45 days of 2011, there have been more UFO reported sightings than at any other time in the history of the Earth. We are absolutely being swamped with UFO type reports. Now, to me, I thought last year before December we would see the official announcement that they are here because of so much increased activity in the UFO sector and the government, as you say, Clinton and some of the others saying things in the public that would draw your attention to the fact that maybe we aren't alone. Then when the Catholic Church said, well, you know, aliens can be saved too, I'm thinking, okay, what's going on here? You know?
Hey. That was the guy who holds the Pope's meteor collection, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I know. We're looking at some very, as the Chinese say, interesting times.
Yes. So what can we see coming? What do you think will be some of these signs? And... you know, how does this relate to biblical prophecy?
All right, number of things. Certainly, we're going to see a problem with the sun. The prophecies in the book of Revelation do speak of a time when the heat of the sun will become so much that it will burn a third of the trees and the grass, you know, green grass. It'll burn that up on the earth. It might be that one side of the earth is facing a large flare, coronal mass ejection of something that hits the sun, the surface of the earth, or it may be that an Earth-directed solar flare destroys the ozone layer temporarily and allows ultraviolet light to come in and burn people's skin, and you know, fire results is another part of it. I don't know, but the sun is the villain. It's pointed at, did the angel make the sun do something, and Earth, a portion of the Earth, will burn. The Hopi prophecies say the same thing, and Holly and I visited with them down there, and they have, in the Orthodox Hopi tradition, they have the underground mud igloos being built, which are like kivas, they call them, to stay in them several weeks with rice and beans and water they're storing down there for when the sun gets hot. And they've said that God, you know, Masau, has told them to do this hundreds of years ago at this time when it approaches, and they're saying that's now. In the biblical prophecies, there's a thing spoken of famine, you know, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Right now, we are facing imminent famine across the planet. The weather and climate changes we talked about at the beginning of the show are causing food production to just absolutely die. And there are hundreds of millions of people that depend on grain loans from places like America, and China's been wanting, you know, input there as well. When there's no grain, there's going to be famine. There's no rice, there's going to be famine. And we are faced with this right now. And what food is remaining able to be produced in the next couple of years is going to be so expensive that people won't be able to afford it. So crime is going to go up. Disease is going to go up. Because of the travel we have between countries by ship and by plane, communicable diseases, once they get loose, will wipe the planet, pandemics. And again, this is stuff that the Bible has talked about, the pestilences that will hit the earth. So many of the things are right upon us and can easily be attributed to exaggerations of geophysical events and cosmological events that we're aware of. Something is going to fall into our oceans and pollute them and kill a lot of the fish. Starkhall wormwood, we've mentioned that code name. It's going to fall into the earth, and we've got divisions of the Air Force that watch in Space Command that watch for near-Earth objects as best they can all the time. We've got other observatories around the planet in the Southern Hemisphere doing the same thing as best they can, looking for near-Earth objects that are going to fall and hit us and cause the destruction told about in the Book of the Revelation. Holly and I met a guy. Holly and I visited Space Command here in Colorado Springs a couple years back, and they signed a major there to us to take us around. And his nickname in the facility was Major Meteor, because his job was, of course, to track all these things. He turned out to be a Christian fellow, a believer, and was quite well aware of the prophecies. And we were both surprised to see that they had someone like that and allowed him to work in the facility doing this. But that's what his job was to keep an eye on these things and see if something was going to be threatening us near the earth or near the surface. Now, the other things that we can see, there's going to be a great earthquake, a huge earthquake, the biggest one in the history of man, that's going to occur during the period that the Bible speaks of in this time as the tribulation period. And already, since we've been talking about the planets expanding as they get older, we can see how stretching the surface of the planet is not going to help plate tectonics much. It's going to make earthquakes and big ones occur. And if you just look at the pictures I've got there of the earthquakes that have occurred in Chile since January the 1st of 2010, it's like last 14 months, that's the worst place on the planet for earthquakes at the moment. And it looks like someone just bombed them with earthquakes. And you can see in the next picture around the Ring of Fire around Australia and into Indonesia and around New Zealand, they've been very busy there as well. And in the United States, we have our own set of problems with a earthquake series running up the Sierra Madres and running up part of the Rocky Mountains in through Wyoming and Yellowstone and up into Mount St. Helens area. And the USGS is putting out earthquake occurrences, reports to us, because we get momentary reports from USGS, and they've been deleting earthquakes in Arkansas and deleting earthquakes in Yellowstone. And, I mean, like when I say deleting, there were 12 earthquakes in the last 2 weeks in Yellowstone. That almost as soon as they came in, they jerked them back and said, sorry, delete that. It didn't happen. And when you read the excuse, they say, this has been reviewed by a live seismologist person, and this doesn't count as an earthquake. And so they remove it from the database so you can't see it. But the ones that they've left on there tell you that something is happening just to the western side of Yellowstone. You can see it on the earthquake map I've plotted there. So all these areas have problems, and earthquakes is going to be a severe problem. Tsunamis, subsidence, coastal areas of the West Coast falling off. Up near Oregon and Washington, any little vibration up there of serious note can release the Juan de Fuca pressure, which has been overdue for 55 years for a Richter 9, and that's no secret. If that goes, there will be tsunamis inland there into the California and Oregon coastlines. And it will be so quick that you won't have time to get out of the way if you're out on the beach when it happens. What else could happen? Pandemic. Oh, nuclear war, minor thing. Middle East, Iran is going nuts over there and trying to form an Arab League, a confederation of Arab Islamic states against Israel. And, of course, they've got access to the bomb. And biblical prophecy does speak of Damascus in Syria being melted to the ground, I mean like totally destroyed, becoming a garbage heap, a waste dump that no one wants to live in. And to me that sounds like a nuclear device goes off over or inside or underground or somewhere around Damascus, whether by an accident that they trigger themselves or by, you know, let's say an Israeli preemptive attack if Syria tries to attack them in conjunction with Iran and, you know, a couple of the other Arab states around there that are now turning against them, even like Egypt. So that threat is a clear and present danger. Pick a danger. Pick a threat. I mean, hey, throw a dart at the board.
It's happening.
All of these.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, I know. Well, let's go to break.
There's no doubt about it that we're standing on the precipice of catastrophe. And I really believe that the power of us, the power of prayer, the power of our minds linking together and harmony and could lessen these effects. But there's no escape, so we better prepare. Discuss the idea of a potential Planet X, another body in our solar system causing havoc on planet Earth, CME ejections, coronal mass ejections coming, Yellowstone earthquakes, the West Side earthquakes, all over the world earthquakes. Along with this, you can add all the technological advancements of ionospheric heaters and the many ways that we can manipulate the Earth grid at this point. And, of course, all of this is going to absolutely lead us straight down to an economic collapse, which we all see coming. It's happening. I mean, we're here living it. What advice do you have, or what can we do for the preparing for this coming global economy collapse?
Well, you know, Freeman, it's probably going to be different for every person's personal circumstance. People on fixed incomes are going to be in a kind of a world of hurt, but Holly has put a lot of that information and advice in the Dare to Prepare book, but basically summarizing some of that, the people need to realize that our dollar, which buys food, which a lot of it's imported, our dollar is going to lose, already is losing value, and because of the addition of a lot of extra dollar bills being printed and put into the economy through the QE2, QE3 process, we're going to see by the end of this year that the dollar is maybe worth a fourth what it is now. And if it goes that low, that means that for your fruit, for your vegetables that we get out of Mexico and southwestern United States and other countries, even some out of the Middle East, that fruit is going to be four times as expensive, or the vegetables. You know, you just won't be able to afford to buy it on fixed income. So right now is a good time to get freeze-dried foods and store those, because all you need for that is water and a bit of heat if you want a comfort food. You need to get medicines and various other things that are going to go through the roof, because a lot of our medicines are made overseas. Anything that we have to buy that has an imported cost factor in it, you know, offshore cost factor, which most everything is these days, is going to be so expensive that we just can't afford it on our normal budgets. So you want those things rather than money. There's also some wisdom to getting small gold or silver coins to trade with, but understand that that's only going to be just so valuable, because people are going to want what those coins buy, not the coins so much. They're going to want,
exactly,
you know, and that's what
you're
people
better off having a case of whiskey, I think.
Oh yeah, that and cigarettes. Even if you're not a smoker, they become a barterable item, you know, because people are addicted to cigarettes. So, you know, and you know, as I said, medicines and foods that you like to eat, because people thinking they can put out, you know, a few hundred pounds of rice in a container or something, and, oh, they'll survive on rice. Just haven't tried that yet. Rice or beans or wheat and stuff, your body is not used to digesting that much of those kinds of goods at once. You get used to the meats, whether they be canned or whatever else, but you get food fatigue. I mean, you know, you can only eat rice so many days before it gets old, and you need spices. And Holly's made a good point of that in her book and on the website, and saying, look, you get spices, buy lots of spices in these big bottles, and cans that you can get at the supermarket, because you want to spice up the bland food that you're going to have, what's going to be available, and grow your own. Yeah. Now, Holly's even got an e-book on our website called Garden Gold, and she's collected a lot of other people's information and put her own information in about soil mixtures and how to make 4-foot by 4-foot gardens right at home, and even in some places where you can do it on a landing if you live in an apartment or on top of the roof as a community project to grow your own vegetables and you know how to protect it. I mean, most of us aren't farmers. You have to learn it. And we've been doing exactly what she says in the book. We've got these 4x4 and one 4x8 garden out there in an orchard. And we've been learning the hard way about how you keep the bugs out of it and how you keep certain things warm and others you don't, and how much shade you put on them and all this kind of stuff. That is how you prepare for what is coming. The things you need to live: water, food, protection, medicine. And in the protection side, we do believe in owning your own firearms and lots of ammunition. You can never have enough ammunition, because people are going to go weird. And as head of your household, I don't care what your religious beliefs are, if you do not protect your household and your family, you're remiss in your duties. You have to realize that there are going to be crazies out there. It's going to be like the Wild West when this hits. Now, the economy is...
Egypt is a clear sign of how that could all fall.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People are going to want to feed their families, and they suddenly realize that their dollar doesn't go that far. They're unemployed. There's no hope for them, no help for them. They can't get the food stamp foods, or because there's not enough food there to get. They're going to become desperate, and desperate people make desperate villains. If where we are here, just north of us, 40, 50 miles in Colorado Springs, there have been a number of daylight break-ins where they just kicked the door in and held the people hostage and robbed them with four people with guns. Now, this is going to get a lot worse, and people don't realize this, but you got to put that factor into what's happening in the economy. Now, going on a global basis, this is just the United States we're talking about. On a global basis, everyone's going to be getting real hungry and have a lot of problems, and everyone is going to see money disappearing. The U.S. dollar is not any longer going to be the thing that oil is priced in. The U.S. dollar per barrel is not going to be it. It might be the yuan, Chinese, or something. The Chinese are already starting to call for a different currency backing the oil prices. So you can see that our dollar is not going to be as held as high as it was before. And Americans traveling overseas are going to know that if they're caught offshore when the dollar drops. They're not even going to have enough to get home if they haven't already bought return tickets and things like that. So people are going to be in strife everywhere, calling out for someone or some group to solve planet Earth, get them all work, get them all food, peace and safety. And they're going to be ripe, because of this, for a global, quote-unquote, government run by a select few to take over the planet and solve it for them. Same thing happened in the Weimar Republic before Hitler took over. People were crying out for somebody to get rid of the turkeys that were crazy there in their version of the House of Representatives or the government. Get rid of all these elected politicians. Let's have someone get in there and temporarily take the power to solve the problems. And that guy is going to be the Antichrist spoken of, and his supporter, the false prophet, who will do a lot more than he did, I think, before he's through, who will take over the earth. Not by force, but by deceit and lies of peace and harmony and all that kind of stuff. He will trick people, and he will get the power. Almost like what happened in the American election here recently with We Can. It's just people were fooled. A lot of them are sad now, but it's done.
Right. Yeah, and they have technological advancements that they can use against us, holograms and things of this nature. One that I have noted is the New Light experiment that Russia launched a while back, with which basically looks like a star in the sky, and they're using it to herald this Maitreya character.
Yes, he is a definite figure in all this. I forget the exact translation that we did, but we put his name into Hebrew and did get the 666, Maitreya, years ago. This fellow is supposed to be young, dark-headed. I've seen a couple of photos of him in a white robe, and he's no name given to him other than Maitreya. And we don't know whether that's a real deal, whether he's going to be the Antichrist or the false prophet or whatever this age, but there is certainly a lot of talk, and a lot of people follow Benjamin Cream's news releases on him. You know, people that are studying scripture, Christian and Jewish scripture, will understand and be able to point out who comes in his own name and who is really a deceiving liar, is what it amounts to. And that's going to be the bottom line. In Matthew, Jesus says, in 24, he says, look, if someone comes to you and says, the Messiah is out here in the desert in this secret place, don't believe it. When I come, the true Messiah, you will know it, and everything on the planet will know it all at once, all over the planet, because it'll be like the lightning going from the east to the west. I will light up this planet when I come back. So don't be fooled by a substandard false Messiah that says, oh, I'm hiding out here in this cave or in an orbit or wherever. You got to see me here. That's rubbish. It will be an imposter. So that is the one thing that I use in my own mind to prepare myself. If I'm here when this deception starts, that will be the criteria we use to say false one and wait for the good one. And I think that both are going to be here within the next 10 years, one way or another.
That's amazing. And it definitely feels that way. When I look around, all I see are satanic symbols left and right for myself. Looking at corporate logos, I can decipher satanic symbols. I personally think that our corporate reality is manufactured by a satanic cult, or if not Satan himself, because I can look around and say, okay, the pentagram and shell of Texaco and Shell are symbols of Venus and therefore symbols of Lucifer. Or I see a strike friction match on Phoenix Pictures and I say, hey, that's Lucifer. A friction match is a Lucifer. I see 666 on the CERN logo. I see Fox equals 666. I have a bitten apple on my computer. I mean, how many satanic references do I need to see in my life to think that something is going on here?
You know, I wonder about that 666 business. The Bible is open to everyone, including the Satan and those who follow him. And I'm wondering how they're going to get around that 666 thing. And I suppose that what will happen is that the leader will say, look, to show you that I'm not caught up in all this religious holiness stuff, I'm going to say 666, that's going to be my number. And look, nothing happened. Did lightning strike me? No. Okay? And don't believe all that stuff. It's all rubbish. And he's going to poo-poo it, and you know, so people accept it and not panic. But the Bible is very clear that anyone who takes the money number, which is coming in the world economy, that number which is imprinted on their right hand or their forehead, anyone who does that is they're doomed. When they die, they're going to hell, or you know, don't exist anymore. They're finished. And that is because you will have to swear allegiance to this new global leader who will proclaim himself a god, and he will even do that in the new temple being designed right now in Jerusalem. It's going to be interesting to see how they get permission to build that there with the mosque and the Dome of the Rock there. But anyway, there will be a way.
I'm watching that. You know, the Pope Benedict was the first pontiff to ever visit the Temple Mount. They're absolutely making moves on this.
Have you seen how the Catholic Church has been holding those global seminars on getting all the religions together into one happy family?
Right there in the Pyramid of Peace in Astana, they're pulling them all together under that giant pyramid with the big sun table around the middle.
It is so spooky. I can't believe my eyes. I can't believe that they're being that open about it, but it is happening. And people out there are just kind of walking in a sleepy stupor. They just don't see it.
No, they don't at all. And you know, I try to point it out on many levels, but I try to also not freak them all out by showing you, hey, look, Satan's right here watching you and is in control. Even Barack Obama, when brought into office, was not allowed to use the name Jesus Christ in his inaugural prayers. They had to use such terms as the God of many understandings or the Lord of all nations. And if I remember correctly, it was the Lord of all nations, Satan, that offered the nations to Jesus. So, you know, even this type of thing is right there out in the open. When he took his inaugural oath, he said, oh, I forgot my Bible, but it still counts. You know, but sometimes I wonder if they're just setting up a war so that the atheists and the Christians fight as Albert Pike had predicted for his World War III. if they're not doing this intentionally to incite some violence out of people.
Well, I think you're probably right there. They do want that violence, which will allow them to exert more power to bring a quote-unquote order and sanity to the population, you know, by getting rid of a few troublemakers. It'll give them the authority, the people will give them the authority happily to bring peace, even if it means sacrificing the neighbor. We saw that in Nazi Germany. You know, people next door to Jews looked at their possessions and said, oh, I like that piano they got. That guy's a Jew and he's a traitor over there. Can I have his goods now because I turned him in? And we're going to see that here. We're going to see that. And
so how can we bind some humans? I mean, it's obvious that we're going to have to form some community here. What are some of the positive aspects of this, and how can we start to bond?
Well, Freeman, look, I think that we are going to be helped in most miraculous ways, is the best way to describe it, miraculous ways in this time. Whether, there are proponents that will be raptured and taken off the planet, but there are also proponents that say we'll go through a portion of the tribulation period. Whatever happens, we're going to be...
I dropped in there a bit early on me. How many of you out there have the faith to put your life in God's hands? Not some leader, not some legislation, not some government, but the true miraculous force that guides our lives if we allow it. How many of you have the courage to stand up and say, I'm going to follow my true divine path and see what happens? And as Stan Deo is telling us, miracles happen, and there's no doubt about it. So please carry on, Stan.
All right, well, I don't think we have time for me to tell you about some of the miracles that happened in my life, but I have met an angel that helped me when I was wounded once in the leg in the hospital. She just appeared in the doorway and came in and rubbed some salve or something, I don't know whether it was nanoparticles or whatever on it, and my leg was healed greatly overnight, and I had 18 inches of bullet hole and cut arteries and everything. So, to this day, I mean, I proved she wasn't there, but she was, and... So I know that we have angels walking among us, good ones and bad ones. I think these messengers, some of them are the bad guys, whether they be clones or hybrids or whatever you want to call them. But I think we have both kinds walking among us, the Bible tells us. So I think that believing Christians who are supporting Jesus, Yeshua ben Elohim, who are supporting him, will have protection and provision for all their needs, spiritual and physical both. It doesn't mean you just sit back on your butt and do nothing. It means you prepare as best you can in your situation, and you pray to the good Lord to surround, to indwell you with the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit, which gives you power that you just have no idea what it can do as far as healing and telling you information and communicating with other people and even teleporting you as we're shown in the New Testament. So I believe this will happen. It will be, as I said, like Noah was helped, like Lot was helped. They were taken out of harm's way when judgment was coming upon the rest of the earth. Noah had plenty to eat for a year and a nice home there at sea with all the animals and his family and his in-laws. And Lot and his daughters, they were provided for over on the other side of the mountains once Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. His wife, however, turned back and she was destroyed. But there are people that will be protected, believers, followers, true followers of the way that Jesus laid down for us, will be protected and provided for in this time miraculously. And I've had dream visions myself of something happening that might be part of it, like flaming tongues of fire coming out of the sky, like meteorites, but slower, falling down over in the western skies. I saw that as I was waking up a bunch of watchmen, Christian watchmen, who were asleep in their pup tents and had overslept their alarm, and I was waking them up by reaching through this webbing on them. I guess that represented the internet web, I don't know. But at the beginning of what is about to happen, this miraculous sign will appear, and it gives a strange kind of orange glowing light, orange pinkish light, around you that you can't see the source of it. It just, the air even is like that. I'm just recalling the dream vision as I had it. And this, I saw this starting here in the United States, in the western states, kind of like where we are here in Colorado. I could see the formations and the cliffs and the dirt and how it all looked here. So I know that these things are coming, and I've gotten emails and phone calls from other believers who've had dream visions and even daylight visions, showing them that the Holy Spirit is going to descend on the believers and surround them and engulf them and will provide them with even food when it is necessary. But in the meantime, we're supposed to do what we can to prepare ourselves and others and to illuminate them as to what their options are, the gift that they can accept, you know, of salvation. And it's on page 127 of the Cosmic Conspiracy. It's been on that page in every edition of the book I've printed, in over 250,000 copies and 3 languages, and German, French, and English, because it is so important. Above all else, page 127 is to get yourself right with God immediately, so that no matter when you die, you know, sooner than later or later, that you are taken care of and reborn and live again. And that's my philosophy, and I've put that very strongly in the Cosmic Conspiracy because I believe it. I've experienced it, and I've had near-death experience, which let me experience even more than most people get to. Believe me, it is time to sign on if you haven't, and you will have a peace that you have never felt before once you do. How's that sound?
Hey, that sounds fantastic, and I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. Even though I don't, from a biblical background, was not raised with a religion, I have found this truth in the Holy Spirit. I have been guided to angels. I have been led down a miraculous path. And I believed in the philosophy of quit your job, put your life in God's hands. And when I did, I found the most miraculous world waiting for me that guided me, led me, and brought me everywhere I needed to do. And all I needed to do myself was just take the little step first, just to be showing myself to God, willing to make these steps, willing to go out and share my beliefs with the rest of the world, and the rest just unfolded on its own.
I understand and agree completely. You know, Freeman, I have so many stories after my conversion,
yeah,
you know, that the miracles that occurred, it being a scientist, it took me a little while to really believe that this was happening, but it does, and it continues and increases in these times. So I want to encourage your listeners, as I'm sure you do frequently, that we are living in miraculous times as well as interesting times, and that the end of all this chaos is at hand. We got a little bit of hard times to go through in some fashion or another, but after that, there's that millennial reign of the true king, and we will rebuild this planet and turn it into a Garden of Eden all over the surface, I'm sure.
I know that's in the hearts of the minds of listeners to this show, because that's the message we spread here. So absolutely, I think we have a strong force out there. We just need to motivate them a little bit and to give them the heart needed to make these changes in the world and to make it through these troubling times that we're absolutely going to see. Stan, thank you so much for joining us here on Radio Freeman.
Thank you for having me, Freeman. Shalom.
Shalom. And peace to all of you out there, and believe in these miracles and have faith and follow your hearts, and we'll make it through. We'll see you on the other side.